but learned our lesson that that's the law in New York isn't how it all works to be.
So what happened? Well, tell the Thai interpreter story.
The Thai interpreter story. That wasn't the last tenant, but one of the tenants, as part of this owner occupancy thing, was subletting and doing some other things. And we lived in the building, and I'm Russian and Polish by background. I think I'm now the third generation beyond an immigrant. I think this lady was the same as me, and I used to see her in the hallway, and she talked fine English, but the owner occupancy case, when it came to going to court, she claimed she needed a Thai interpreter. And each time we would show up in court, the court has to provide the Thai interpreter. I guess there's one Thai interpreter for the whole court system. And I think we showed up to court 6 months in a row and there was no Thai interpreter. So gave them, substantial leverage. I wanted to pay my own Thai interpreter to show up. I don't even think she would understand. I don't know if Thai is a language or just Chinese, but whoever.
And I think you told me that the court wouldn't even allow you to pay for your own interpreter.
No. The court has to provide an interpreter.
Yeah, so, that's part of owning in New York, but you eventually you got the space back. But
yeah, we were successful. It took 5 or 6 years where we thought it was going to be a 1 or 2 year process, and then when we finally got the last tenant out and wanted to renovate, my wife was giving birth, and we decided the market had recovered substantially, so we sold the building and decided to rent after that, just because we didn't want to go through a year or two of construction.
You hit upon it. This is what leads people. At a certain point, many of them say, look, I don't want to do the day-to-day management. And they want to increase their cash flow, and that's how they end up in trouble. I was in a meeting with someone last week, however, and their accountant says to me, he says, look, all those things are, is they're really just bonds. And I know I have a different opinion of that, and you do too. What would you say are the downsides when people look at triple net properties?
The comparison to bonds, I don't think is a fair assessment. I think you're buying real estate, and every bit of real estate expertise that somebody has in investing in a New York property transfers over to net lease. From that perspective, the downsides are almost the same as investing in New York real estate. I mean, by definition, single tenant net lease, you have one tenant paying all those obligations. So if there's a problem with that tenant, whether it be bankruptcy, insolvency, at the end of the lease, you own a property and you have all those same responsibilities at the end or termination of that lease that you would have of just like owning a building in New York. Taxes, insurance, maintenance. So when you're diligencing these things, underwriting who that tenant is on the lease, how long they've been in business at that location, what the balance sheet and equity look like of who's guaranteeing those obligations. Because as I tell people, a lease is a piece of paper. And it's not a bond. It's you own that real estate and you have a lease just like you have a lease with any tenant in New York.
I think the bond comment often comes from people who are saying, oh, they have inflation fears or they have interest rate concerns. Oh, if rates rise, that's going to affect the value of my net leased investment and that type of stuff. So, you own these. How do you generally look at an interest rate risk or inflation or something like that?
I think you have to look at each property individually. I think, each investment stands on its own. A lot of people look at net lease and make one assessment into net lease, so whether it be a drugstore that's a flat lease, that's a very different investment than another lease that has escalation. So again, blending kind of the property attributes as well as the tenant attributes and the lease attributes, that's how you get yourself comfortable relative to that risk. If all your eggs are related to the credit, and that's where that bond analogy comes from, and if you, overpay by, so much money for that credit, and the signer on that lease, and don't look at the real estate attributes, you run the risk if that credit changes, or that credit goes away, you put yourself at risk, and it's a constant blend on each investment. There are plenty of net lease investments that have certain attributes that you're looking at more as a real estate play, where there can be, I like to draw the analogy of a rent-controlled or stabilized tenant that, you like the real estate enough and you look at the rent in the market and you say, look, we're not getting credit here, but if this tenant were to leave, we would rent this property for more. And it could be a good thing. Most people don't get into net lease for that reason. And, but we've had certain groups of investors that like to look at comfort relative to real estate more closely than you like to look at credit. Some people come in and they're on either side of that spectrum. I want a bond type lease. I want a credit rated tenant, investment grade. Other people come in and say, I want a good piece of property.
Right.
So kind of blending those two things together is where you kind of set the risk reward on each investment. I mean, the downside to investing here, it's very similar. I mean, I think, one of the things that people don't look at with net lease is the fact that the tenant under a true net lease is shouldering all the inflationary expenses associated with operating that property. I mean, I've owned properties in New York, and it seems like, look at this year. I mean, what was the 1 year rent?
Right.
It was a rent freeze, right?
Yeah.
So not only did you have a rent freeze on a 1 year lease, what was the 2 year, Peter?
Yeah, the 2 year was, I think, 1.5.
And so, I would make the argument that, your expenses are going to go up by more than, luckily oil prices stayed low this year and this winter should be.
Yeah, but taxes definitely didn't, so.
Taxes didn't stay the same.
I think the inflation conversation also has to do with, you got to look at what the time horizon is. If you're going to buy a net lease property, you're going to hold it for 10 years. Your objectives may be a little bit different, and how you look at the risk may be different. If you're saying, hey, this is something that I may need to sell 3 years from now, you're putting yourself in a different position there relative to that risk.
You are. So, I mean, there's short-term risks and long-term risks. I think it just, the inputs you put in a spreadsheet and assumptions, people like to say, well, I think my New York building's going to be worth 50% more in 10 years. And how you get to that point and what you have to pay, what you have to do, what your expenses are to get there if you make that assumption, and saying, if you could sell that same building, I don't know what the cap rates are today in New York, 2-3 cap valuation today versus investing at a 6 cap in a net lease and getting positive leverage, and then you put those cash flow streams next to one another, and people say, and then all those expenses and the associated inflationary costs to running the building, I think you come out somewhere in the middle, and each individual investor has to make an assessment. Do they want to do those things to potentially double their value? And I think people have a short memory. We've been in such an upward movement in value here. I think about it the same way on properties that I'm investing. Oh, it always goes up.
Right.
So I think, the risks, really become of what the individual investor's goal is.
Yeah. Well, you have this whole idea of there's also lifestyle investing too. And that's such a huge component of your business. So I want to switch a little bit away from particularly the net lease buildings themselves and a little bit, you know, just kind of before we wrap up to about yourself. So, you know, you are involved with people in, when we're doing this in conjunction with people who are selling their New York City properties, and we're helping them with the crossover, you know, or the kind of the transition from a New York property that's management intensive into a triple net. You're in a situation where you are advising people at a very important time in their, in, you know, for their finances. It's a transition period. So where did you, who taught you about money, or where did you learn about money? You know, your what did your dad was a teacher, right?
Yeah, my school teacher. My parents were both teachers, and then administrators in schools, principals.
So, I mean, we could be doing an exchange for someone who's selling a $5 million building. They could be selling a $75 million building. And so you're dealing with numbers that, you know, that are, you know, can be and even bigger than that. So where did you learn this stuff? Because if your parents were school teachers, they weren't doing $75 million exchanges.
They weren't. You know, I've been fortunate to have some good mentors over the years, and making the transition for myself, not to get in the story too much, but I was selling the net lease product already when I bought my first building in New York. And then I opted to make that lifestyle change when I sold that first townhouse after owning it and planning it. It was a different type of decision.
You had the Thai interpreter scenario,
after I went through the Thai interpreter and I looked at it to myself and I said, look, you know, what makes better financial sense to me? And I looked at the uptick in value that I created by vacating the building. You know, I got lucky on that the market had improved as well during my hold period. And I said, you know, what could I make off this money investing in the product that I've learned? And actually, that was a pretty defining change about 15 years ago for me, where that wealth that I created from there, investing it into net lease, I had a huge growth in net lease. A lot of people don't look at the net lease market as something for appreciation, and I kind of encourage people not to look at it that way. But we've seen in the net lease market over the, it's coming on to almost 16 years of me doing this now here, huge appreciation. I mean, the appreciation in most net leases has been, I'd say, between 10 and 50% routinely. I mean, we're recycling some of our investors' returns that, you know, they walked away from, they sold in sort of the 07, 08 kind of height of that market. And then, we're collecting bigger cash flows. Saw then the newest run up and looking at saying, oh, my New York property just retraded for 30% or 40% from what I sold it at. It was crazy. But then those same investors invested in net lease at that time, and we're recycling some of those. They'd gotten a higher income and now are selling at a higher price.
Right. So their prices have gone up also, and they've benefited from
and
the income.
And they've benefited.
You know, meanwhile, you know, they rode out the dip in income and values, and not to mention all the lifestyle stuff. So okay.
So but the answer to your question is I've lived it for myself. I've actually invested with a lot of my clients. One of my mentors was a builder that was, you know, I met him when he was 82 and he died at 95. And, you know, I was fortunate to do a lot of investing together with him and, you know, seeing and being involved with some significant transactions over the years and really seeing how proper people diligence the investment, how the institutions do their diligence when investing in net lease, mm-hmm. and sort of taking that institutional approach of what the REITs look at, what the bigger family offices and bigger international funds are doing in that space, and, you know, transferring that knowledge to my, you know, private clients and to myself.
Right. Right. Well, I know you have a, you know, if people end up talking to you about this more in person, you have a very simple kind of four-pronged methodology for how you underwrite one of the net leases that is kind of, you know, acts as a litmus test to give you an idea of, you know, what the risks are, how to pursue it, and all that kind of stuff. So coming through with a simple lens to look at all these properties is important. You know, something else, so someone like yourself, you're dealing with, you know, you've got the net lease, you've got inflation, interest rates, all these kind of concepts that are out there, and, you know, that people talk about in the world. What do you, you know, do you read the paper every day? How do you keep up on economics? How much value do you put on the day-to-day of this type of stuff? Where do you develop your opinions about, you know, where we are in the market and that type of stuff?
You know, I read a lot. I mean, I actually read the Wall Street Journal every day, the hard copy of it. And, you know, you're bombarded by so much industry email and whatnot. So that keeps you up to date.
Well, I think it's interesting because some people I talk to, they say I actually try not to look at some type of news like that on a daily basis because it chatters and it actually confuses me a little bit. And, you know, sometimes they go to other sources or they, you know, they pick up their opinions differently.
You know, I try and view my real estate investing and what I do for my clients as long-term plays. I mean, I believe people don't address their real estate enough, but you invest in real estate for the long-term and you make investment decisions that are long-term based. I've always been conservative in how I finance myself, you know, levels of leverage and other things. But, you know, the market, I think, in my space of net lease, moves a little bit slower than some of the bigger macro things that go on in the economy. I mean, you know, having that tenant in there that's shouldering a business, depending on what it is. I mean, you know, technology concerns, you know, are something that I like to think about going forward as a long thing. You know, we work in, you know, the restaurant world. You know, you can't.
You're talking about like online retailers and how they'll impact the landscape. You know, gas stations, what's happening with electronic vehicles, things like that.
All those, you know, things, banking.
These are kind of the more mega macro trends as opposed to the day-to-day, oh, our interest rate's going to go up by 25 basis points or go down.
And, you know, if you finance a net lease property with 10-year money on it with a long amortization, you know, you have the ability to stick that out, you know, through a cycle or two. I mean, you know, it's, you know, I can't worry about, you know, what the interest rate's going to be tomorrow. And I mean, it's the same in New York. Like, you know, everyone says New York isn't subject to these things. I think it's just as subject to, I mean, the buyers of these things are driven by those conditions. But yeah, once you make the investment, you're in it.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether it's worth, you know, X amount more, X amount less, you know, the year after you buy it, you can't think about it that way.
Right. Well, the risks are different. All right. Well, look, thanks very much, Glenn. I appreciate your time.
No problem. Always enjoyable to speak to you, Peter.
I will, in the show notes, I will put some of the links to some of the things that we referenced here. And we'll talk to you soon.
Great.